is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The sovereign debt default of the Russian Federation, a momentous detail that Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution has helped us understand many weeks, because when I first spoke to Michael about this possibility, the presumption was, no, they'll never attack Ukraine, because that would lead to, and then along with the collapse of the economy and the anxiety of the world and famine and threat and death, it would lead to sovereign fund default, which Russia has not done since the revolution in the early part of the 20th century. And it's a great concern for anybody in the Kremlin to default on debt. But here we're told that it has happened. The grace period has expired and the debt is in default. However, there is an argument, and I read from a piece of the argument in the New York Times reporting. It appeared that the payments had not reached bondholders' accounts as of Sunday night, as required by the bonds contract just passed. On Monday, Russia's finance ministry said that it had made payments in May and that they had been transferred to Euroclear, a Brussels-based clearinghouse, but subsequently blocked from reaching bondholders. Russia is rejecting the default declaration on the grounds that it has made efforts to pay. Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesman, told reporters that the statements about default were, quote, absolutely illegal. Michael, I need your help. This is an argument. What does Peskov mean, illegal? And what is the concern about the bondholders? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. It is certainly legal. 38 countries imposed sanctions on Russia. Belgium is one of the countries. Euroclear is a Belgian clearinghouse for settlement of derivatives and securities. So everything is legal. The amount is small, $100 million. Russia indeed sends them to Euroclear to pay to bondholders. The consequences are huge because the credit rating will be down. These sort of things like defaults, they last for decades and they reduce credit rating. They increase insurance costs. They increase costs of borrowing for private companies. So the consequences and spillovers are all over the place, despite the small amount. And the Russians were defiant initially. They said, all right, you froze our foreign exchange reserves. We will pay from those reserves. You take the money that you took from us, or you froze them, and we will pay. Then they say we will pay in rubles. Then they said, all right, let the bondholders open accounts. We will open accounts, the Russians said. We will open accounts for bondholders in the Russian national depository to bypass all the sanctions. We will put the money there, but you need to open to use these accounts. We will pay, but eventually, the law is the law. The sanctions are there, and they're in default. And already the Derivatives Determination Committee announced them in default in early June. And by international standards, they're in default for the first time in 104 years.
And it's important to them. Do I say that correctly, Michael, that this is not something that they ignore because it's a blow to their prestige?
It is tremendously important because this sort of defaults on the international financial markets, they color the countries for decades. This is why in 1996, the Russian government settled the debt on which the Soviet government defaulted in 1918, decades later. So look, that was the debt of the Tsarist Russia, which ended in 1970, and the debt of the provisional government that was in 1970. And in 1918, the Soviet government defaulted. And in 1996, Russia settled that debt. It was that important. So generally, this means that for generations, for decades, this will be hanging on the credit worthiness of the country on the international financial markets.
Now we go to the Russian Central Bank, which is a beautiful building you've introduced me to these many weeks. And I read from Reuters, Russia's Central Bank sees room for further rate cut and will lower interest rates as inflation slows. This is according to the governor of the Russian Central Bank, Elvira Nebulina. On the ruble, Nebulina said the central bank would stick to its floating exchange rate policy and that emergency currency restrictions should be lifted as soon as the situation is stabilized. Why are they lowering rates? What do they want to achieve with this, Michael?
The Russian economy and the Russian financial system is in a trap. What happens is that because of the Western sanctions, imports from all countries in the world have declined in monetary terms and dollar terms by 50% in the first 5 months of 2022 compared by the previous year, which means that half of the imports are no longer available. That's technologies, that's equipment, that's machinery, everything advanced. So they're stuck with their natural resources, with their exports, that they're selling. Exports have declined too, but their revenues are still much higher than what they need for imports. So they're stuck with foreign currency, which they don't know what to do with. They cannot buy foreign securities because they're under sanctions, because the central bank is under sanctions. They cannot produce, they cannot buy imports. Imports from Western countries, meaning advanced imports, technological imports, declined by 60%, from China by 38%, because the Chinese companies are lots of multinational corporations. They follow sanctions there. So generally, they're stuck with a bag of foreign currencies they don't know what to do with. It pushes the ruble up, and then it is a problem for the budget, because if they sell $1 for 100 rubles, they have 100 rubles to pay to their pensioners and to pay for their military expenditures. If they sell $1 for 50 rubles, then they have only 50 rubles. So they want very weak dollars. They want very weak ruble because they want a strong dollar for the budget. But the central bank is afraid that this will produce inflation. And so it is a trap. They are in the trap because of the sanctions.
I see. The ruble is... This just gets a little confusing. There's boasting that the ruble's strong. That's not what they want. They want a weak ruble. The ruble's now 53 per dollar. I'm told, Michael, they want it around 70 or 75. And they can't get there under sanctions, correct? They can't do anything.
Right. So generally, countries want their currency strong, and Russia wanted their ruble strong when they bought imports, because they want cheap imports, they want expensive exports. Now, imports are not available. So the budget is the problem, because they finance now the revenues from oil and natural gas, finance about 63% of the budget. And they need the ruble to be weak so that the dollar will buy lots of rubles, and it will finance lots of expenses. And now it affects the budget deficit. The budget is now in deficit. They have difficulty to finance even military expenditures. So it affects the war.
Michael Bernstein, my guide on the deterioration of the Russian economy. As Michael has made clear over these many weeks, this is not something that will be solved in a year, even 10 years. This will go on for decades. We're talking about the disintegration of the Russian economy from its customer base and its client base and its trading partners. Without technology, Russia will fall farther and farther behind in the 21st century, and it might be that that cannot be reversed. Michael Bernstein at the Hoover Institution, the Russian sovereign debt is in default for the first time since Vladimir Lenin. I'm John Batchelor.